Welcome back to the Deep Dive. It is Monday, February 9th, 2026. Today, we're doing something a little different. Usually when we talk about generative AI, we're talking about the magic. You know the drill. Make me a video of a cat riding a motorcycle on Mars. And poof, it just exists. It's flashy, it's fun, and it's, well, usually completely chaotic.
It's the black box era, right? You put a coin in, you get a prize out, and you definitely don't ask how the machine works.
Exactly. But today, we are looking at the opposite of that. We're looking at the cage that's required to keep that magic from just destroying a professional workflow. Mm. We have a whole stack of documents here, technical briefs, architectural diagrams, and a feature locks registry that's updated as of this morning for a tool called Letterblack Gen AI.
And I think we need to be clear right off the top. This isn't just another ChatGPT wrapper. Not at all. If you really look at the architecture, this is an attempt to solve a very specific, and I mean a very difficult engineering problem. How do you take a probabilistic, you know, a hallucinating AI and force it to work inside Adobe After Effects, a piece of software that's famous for being, well, let's just say temperamental?
Temperamental is a very polite way to put it, especially for anyone who's stared at a render crash at 3 a.m.
It is. So we're talking about bridging this huge gap between cutting-edge large language models, which operate on probability, and After Effects scripting engine, which is built on something called ExtendScript.
And that's the first thing that just jumped out at me in the notes. ExtendScript is basically ES3. For anyone listening who doesn't code, that's JavaScript from 1999.
Right. So, I mean, imagine you have a supercomputer from 2026 trying to control a robot that only speaks a language from the Clinton administration. If the AI gets a command just slightly wrong, if it misses a semicolon or, you know, tries to use a modern function, it doesn't just give you a bad picture.
No.
It hangs the application, it freezes the interface, it crashes the whole render.
So the stakes are actually high here. It's not just, oh, did the AI draw the hand with six fingers? It's, did the AI just brick my entire project file?
Precisely. And that is why those documents we're looking at describe a system designed explicitly to prevent that crash. They call it the Lockstep Boundary Engine, or LBE.
That name, Lockstep Boundary Engine.
Tucker.
It sounds less like a creative tool and more like a riot control system.
It basically is. I mean, the developers have split the application into two distinct layers just to manage this risk. Layer one is what you see, the UI. It's a CEP extension, which it acts like a little Google Chrome browser window running right inside After Effects. That's where the chat happens. That's where all the modern web stuff lives.
Okay, so that's the pretty face. What about layer two?
Layer two is the LBE. It's the gatekeeper. Think of the LBE as a very, very strict contract lawyer standing at the border between the web world and After Effects. The AI on the website says, hey, I want to move this layer to the left. And the LBE steps in and says, show me the paperwork.
It demands a permit.
Essentially, yeah. It validates the input against a really strict schema. It checks for these capability gates.
Mm.
And if the command doesn't match the contract expectation perfectly, like if it tries to do something ES3 can't handle, the LBE just kills it. Kills it before it ever touches After Effects.
So it prevents those silent failures.
Exactly. In a normal chatbot, if the code is, say, 90% right, it might run and just do something weird. Here, if it's not 100% compliant with the ES3 standards, the LBE just shuts it down. It's a deterministic safety architecture.
That's interesting because it treats the host application After Effects as this volatile environment that needs protection. It's not trying to unleash the AI.
No.
It's trying to domesticate it.
Domestication is the perfect word for it. And if you look at the feature locks registry from this week, you can see just how aggressive they are being about this domestication. They're not just adding features, they're actively locking down behavior.
Let's talk about those locks then. There was a pretty significant update on February 6th about the intelligence bridge. This seems like a major shift in how the user actually interacts with the tool.
Oh, this is huge for the actual user experience. The intelligence bridge and the context-aware plugin, they used to be optional. You could, you know, toggle them on or off in the settings.
And now?
Now they're locked to always on.
But why remove the choice? I mean, usually power users love toggles. Let me configure my setup.
It's because of the garbage in, garbage out principle. The context-aware part is what injects your actual project data, your layer names, comp settings, what you have selected into the prompt. So if a user turned that off just to save a few milliseconds of processing time, the AI effectively went blind.
Okay, so if I asked it, make this blue, and I had the context turned off.
Well, the AI would have no idea what this is. It would just hallucinate. It would give you generic code for making a solid blue, which might not even apply to the text layer you actually have selected. By locking it to always on, the developers are basically saying, we are not going to let you use this tool incorrectly. They're enforcing a baseline of quality.
It feels a bit paternalistic, though, doesn't it? We know what's best for you.
Well, in a professional environment where one bad script can cost you hours of work, yeah, usually they do know best. It just ensures that the AI always has the ground truth of your project.
Speaking of the AI going blind, I want to dig into the vision pipeline. This tool could take screenshots of the After Effects interface to help debug issues. But there was a bug in the logs, a critical lock, about a vision offline badge.
This one is a classic software comedy of errors. It really, really shows how complex these systems can get.
It sounds like an identity crisis for the bot.
It was. So the UI has this little badge that tells you if the computer vision model is active, and users were seeing vision offline, so they naturally assumed the feature was broken and they couldn't send screenshots. But the logs show the model was working just fine.
So the machine can see, but it thought it couldn't see?
It was a logic error in a function called aicore.getProviderInstance. Basically, the code that asks who is providing the vision service was failing to get a name tag back.
Yeah.
And because it couldn't verify the name of the provider, it just defaulted to showing the offline badge.
Even though his eyes were wide open.
Right. They patched it to correctly infer the effective model, but it just highlights how fragile these governed architectures can be. Yeah, so many checks and balances. Is the provider active? Is the instance valid? Is the bridge open? That sometimes the safety mechanism itself triggers a false alarm.
It's the downside of that contract lawyer we mentioned earlier. Sometimes he holds up the line because he lost his own pen.
That is a very, very accurate analogy. And when you have that many layers of validation, finding out which layer is confused, that becomes the real job.
Okay, now, we have to talk about the NOAA list.
Yeah.
Because in product development, what you remove is often more telling than what you add. And looking at these docs, Letterblack is just aggressively pruning features.
The quick commands removal is the first one that really strikes me.
The CMD plus K menu. I mean, everyone loves a command palette. It's in VS Code. It's in Slack. Why kill it?
The note just says, per user request and simplification, they stripped quickcommands.js and all its modules completely out. It suggests that having two or three ways to do the same thing chatting versus the command palette versus clicking was actually slowing people down.
Cognitive load.
Exactly. If I have to stop and decide how to interact with the tool, that's friction. By removing the palette, they force everything through either the primary chat interface or the buttons. It just standardizes the behavior.
But the big one, the one that really signals a philosophy change, is the image generation pivot. The brief is explicit about this. This tool no longer generates images.
And that is a massive deviation from the market trend. Everyone else is racing to add image generation.
So wait, if I ask it to make a cool sci-fi background for my video,
yeah,
it just says no.
It refuses. It literally cites rule two.
What's rule two?
No URL video audio analysis and no asset creation outside the bounds of automation.
Wow. That is a hard line to draw. Why would they handicap their own tool like that?
Because of focus. Think about it. There are 1,000 tools that can generate images. Midjourney, DALL-E, Adobe Firefly. Letterblack isn't trying to compete there. It's positioning itself as an assistant for a technical artist.
Okay, explain the difference for the listener who might not know those industry terms.
So a technical artist or a TA doesn't usually paint the matte background. The TA builds a pipeline so the painter can work. They write the script that renames 1,000 files. They fix the broken expression. They build the rig. Letterblack allows image editing, like background removal, because that's a utility task. But creation, that's for the artist. Yeah. The AI is the mechanic.
That's a fascinating distinction. It's moving away from generative AI in the creative sense and more toward generative automation.
And it keeps them out of legal hot water, too. There are no copyright issues if you aren't generating the pixels.
Yeah.
It makes the tool safe for enterprise use in a way that a wild image generator just isn't.
And this aligns with the YouTube workflow change, too. It used to analyze YouTube URLs directly, right?
It did. You'd drop a link and it would scrape the video to give you a summary or maybe some script suggestions.
And now?
Gone. Now it's a transcript first flow. You have to go get the transcript yourself and paste it into a pop-up.
So they're making the human do the dirty work of sourcing.
It's all about compliance. Sourcing data from third-party platforms is just a legal minefield. By forcing the user to paste the text, the user takes full responsibility for the data source.
But they did add a memory feature to it, so it's not totally painful.
They did. It remembers the last transcript you pasted, so they made it compliant, but they tried to keep it from being annoying. It's a very, very delicate balance between legal safety and user sanity.
Okay, I want to get into the developer diaries section of this brief. Mm. This is where we see the actual bugs that were patched leading up to today, February 9th. And there is one entry in here that just sounds like a nightmare scenario. The infinite recursion crisis.
Maximum call stack size exceeded. The five words every single developer dreads.
So what actually happened there? For the non-coders, recursion is usually just a headache.
Okay, imagine two really polite people standing at a doorway. One says, after you. The other says, no, no, after you. No, I insist, after you. No, after you. And they do this forever until they starve to death. That's infinite recursion.
And in this case, the two polite people were software files.
It was a civil war between evilscriptadapter.js and bridgecontract-validator.js.
The adapter and the validator. Sounds like a bad cop movie.
It really does. So the adapter tries to get the selected layers from After Effects so it can send them to the AI. But to do that, it has to pass through the validator. The validator sees the request and says, wait, I need to check the state of the layers to validate this request. So the validator calls the adapter to get the layers.
Which triggers the validator again.
And the adapter calls the validator. And the validator calls the adapter. It happened at the speed of silicon. I mean, within milliseconds, the stack just exploded and the whole plugin crashed.
It's an endless loop of bureaucracy.
Precisely. And the fix was really interesting. They couldn't just change the logic. They had to, for that one specific check, bypass their own safety architecture.
So they broke their own rules.
They had to. They used a function that's referred to in the code as Elboriginal Adobe Sapival Script.
That is a shouty variable name. It's in all caps in the document.
It is the break glass in case of emergency handle. It bypasses the LBE wrapper completely and goes straight to the raw Adobe host code to get the data without triggering the validation loop.
It just goes to show that sometimes you can be too safe. If you validate everything, you end up validating the validator until the universe collapses.
That's a pretty deep philosophical point for a Monday morning, but yes, the architecture has to be flexible enough to know when to trust itself.
There was another bug that caught my eye because of how aggressive the fix was. The dockable UI issue. This feels like the software stepping over the line a little bit.
Ah, the smart wrapper. This is where the governance gets invasive.
This is about scripts creating floating windows when they shouldn't, right?
Right. So in After Effects, a script can either be a panel, which docks nicely into the UI like a Lego brick, or a window, which just floats over everything. Users wanted panels. But a lot of older scripts, or scripts written by an AI that trained on old forums, they default to creating a window object.
So you run the script, and a window just pops up and floats over your work. It's annoying, but it's not fatal.
Well, the developers decided it was unacceptable. The fix they implemented is, well, it's aggressive. They implemented this rejects-based smart wrapper that intercepts the code before it runs. It hunts down any window assignments and dot show calls and just strips them out.
It rewrites the code on the fly.
It rewrites the user's code on the fly to force the UI to inject into the panel root. It's effectively saying, I know you asked for a window, but you're wrong. You're getting a panel.
That is incredibly bold. I mean, usually software just executes what you tell it to execute.
It is. It's rewriting the user's intent to preserve the user's experience. It ensures the interface stays clean, even if the code itself asks to be messy.
It really reinforces that theme of governance, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. The system is taking an active role in policing the code. It's not just a passive executor.
It's an editor.
An editor, yeah.
Which brings us to the final piece of the puzzle, memory. Because all this policing is pretty useless if the AI just forgets who you are every time you restart the app.
Right. This is the sidecar file concept. myproject.ap.ai-memory.json.
This is, in my opinion, the most understated feature in the whole brief. Usually, an AI chatbot lives in the cloud. When you close the browser tab, the session is gone. Or maybe it's saved in a history list, but it's disconnected from your actual work.
But this file lives on your hard drive.
Right next to your After Effects project file. If your project is named Super Bowl Commercial v1.aep.ai.memory.json.
So it creates a persistent brain for that one specific project.
Exactly. So if you tell the AI on a Monday, hey, the client hates the color green, never use it, and you close the app. Hmm. When you open it back up on Friday, the AI reads that sidecar file. Hmm. And if you ask for a green solid, it'll say, wait, I thought we weren't doing green.
That completely changes the relationship. It stops being a tool you use and starts being more of a collaborator.
A collaborator with context. And they recently updated this to include closed project metadata. So even if you haven't opened the project in a month, the AI can still peek into that JSON file and know what the project was about without you having to re-explain the whole creative brief.
It solves the amnesia problem.
It does. And for a professional workflow, that continuity is worth so much more than any image generation feature. You aren't starting from zero every single morning. You're picking up where you left off.
So when we step back and look at the whole thing, Letterblack Gen AI, the lockstep boundary engine, the removal of creative toys like Image Gen, the aggressive bug fixing, the sidecar memory, what's the big picture here?
I think we're seeing a maturation point. We are moving past the wow phase of generative AI. We are finally entering the integration phase.
The boring phase.
The boring phase is where the real work gets done. This architecture, it acknowledges that the world isn't going to rewrite itself for AI. After Effects is 30 years old. It's not changing its core code for a chatbot. So the AI has to change to fit After Effects.
It's a shift from generalist AI, the do-everything bot, to specialized AI.
Highly specialized. This is a tool for a technical artist. It's designed to build pipelines, fix broken scripts, and automate all the boring stuff. It's not there to be your creative muse. It's there to be your reliable engineer.
And honestly, if I'm on a deadline, I don't need a muse. I need a script that doesn't crash my computer because of an infinite recursion loop between the validator and the adapter.
Amen to that. We need tools that work, not tools that just look cool in a demo video.
Well, on that note, if you are one of those technical artists, maybe take a look at those .json files sitting next to your projects. You might be surprised at what your AI has learned about your habits.
Just make sure your LBE is active before you check. We don't want any silent failures.
Always keep the shields up. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll catch you on the next one.